My name is George Kontaxis. I'm a PhD student at Columbia, and I'm here to talk to you about privacy-preserving social plugins. So in the first part of my talk, I'm going to point out the privacy risks stemming from the current design of plugins. And please keep in mind that this is a risk that most users aren't aware of, and this risk remains even if these users do not interact or otherwise use these plugins. In the second part of my talk, I'm going to propose a new way of building social plugins so that they are privacy preserving, but at the same time without sacrificing any kind of functionality or content personalization. What I'm about to propose is able to handle the support of the major providers of social plugins, including Facebook and Twitter and Google and LinkedIn. We do not require their explicit collaboration to do so. However, ideally, our design could be adopted by them and offered to their users as a service without the need to install any software on the client side. So social plugins are basically little widgets. They're offered by online social networking services, or SNS, and they are included by web developers in third-party websites, usually in the form of iframes. They allow users to interact with the page of the content, with the content of the page, using their social identity via a series of actions such as sharing the content, approving the content, commenting on the content, subscribing, and so on. And at the same time, they enable some sort of personalized information using the user's social data. So for instance, a social plugin might inform the user that his friends, Bob and Alice, have already interacted with this particular page. So just to give you an idea of how popular these plugins are, consider that Facebook has close to 1 billion users and that 33% of the top websites have integrated the like button, which is one of the social plugins offered by Facebook. And at the same time, we have Gmail, which has close to 425 million users. And at the same time, its like button equivalent, called the plus one button, has an adoption rate of more than 22% among the most popular websites. So how actually do these plugins work? Well, imagine that you are visiting a page outside a social network. It could be a news page, a blog, a personal page, or whatever. And you'll see that there's a social plugin included in the page. Let's say that it's the like button. It's the most popular one, anyway. So the browser, in an attempt to load any external page elements, including the social plugins, issues HTTP requests using their source URLs. In the case of the social plugins, those source URLs are directed towards Facebook, and they include as a parameter the name of the page being targeted. And at the same time, the browser will attach any cookies related to the domain of that URL, in our case, facebook.com. So then, the social network will consider which is the page being targeted and who the user is based on the received cookies, and will return non-personalized but page-specific content. So here we see that we get the number of Facebook users in general have liked this particular page, and also returns content personalized to the user. And here we see we get the names and photos of the user's friends who have already liked this page. Now, what's wrong with this model of social plugins? What are the privacy risks we're having? So first of all, the ubiquity of social plugins enables them to do the following tracking. So imagine that the browser visits page A having like a like button, and it issues a request towards Facebook, and Facebook returns the content and a cookie uniquely identifying the browser. Then the browser visits site B, which also has a like button. In his efforts to render that plugin, the browser will transmit a new HTTP request and attach the cookie which it has received from site A. Then Facebook is able to uniquely tie these two requests together and say that the same entity, the same user agent, visited both sites A and B. Now, considering that almost 25% on average that a user visits have a social plugin from Facebook, this means that Facebook is able to to become aware of, to track users in a significant portion of their browsing activity. Now, up until this point, this tracking behavior really reminds us of the kind of tracking done by ad networks. So this is a very traditional form of tracking. However, the key difference between the tracking done by social plugins and tracking done by ad networks is that social networks know the users by name. So they're able to combine tracking information with information identifying the user as a person. So they know his real name, his interests, photos of him, of his friends, and so on. So the scary part is that the user doesn't have to interact with a plugin for that to happen. It's mere presence on a page, and the browser's attempts to render that page will cause requests to be transmitted and this information to be leaked to the respective social network. And of course, the user cannot know beforehand whether a page he's about to visit has social plugins, so before he clicks on a link or visits or types a URL in the address bar of his browser, he cannot know if he's about to leak his browsing history to some social networking provider. So just to give you an example, let's see who knows I have personally visited this particular page on wired.com. We see here that we have a plugin offered by Facebook and one by Twitter and by Google and by LinkedIn. So considering that Facebook requires me to sign up using my real name, it's in their terms of service, and that I have a Gmail account which I use with my real name, so Google knows my real name, and same thing goes for LinkedIn and probably for Twitter. We see that we have four major providers which know that I personally, George, have visited this particular page. So in general, users are not aware of these privacy risks, but if they are and they want to do something about it, let's see what are the current measures they can take against this threat. So first of all, someone could say that if my browser is transmitting my Facebook cookies each time I'm visiting a page with a like button, I will just log out from Facebook, so there's nothing to send. Well, actually, last year, we found that 3 Facebook cookies persisted after the user logged out from Facebook, and one of them was the user's unique ID. So even the user had logged out, if he visited a page carrying a like button, Facebook would receive this unique ID and, of course, the URL of the page. Facebook classified this as a bug and fixed it. However, today we have at least 2 cookies persisting, and they are used to uniquely identify public computers and suspicious activity. Another thing users could do, they could rely on the third-party blocking mechanisms that most popular browsers support. In that case, well, first of all, a third party in a page is considered any page element served from a domain different than the topmost domain, so any domain different than the domain appearing in the address bar. So browsers have this this technique, they can prevent third parties from reading and writing state on the client side, and by doing so, they are hoping to hinder tracking. If users enable third-party blocking, the social plugins will render as if the user is logged out from the social networking service, so the user will lose any kind of personalization. However, the problem is that this solution is not foolproof. As you can see in this table, we have Internet Explorer 9, which allows cookies to be read by a third party, but not to be written. And then we have Firefox, which enables HTML5 local storage information to be read, but not written. And the logic behind this is that if you have like an ad network, which is constantly present in pages as a third party, and you never allow it to write anything, then it will never have anything to read. However, in the case of social networks, where users visit those domains directly to browse their pages, they bring them in a first-party position, so they're able to set cookies, which are later read when those same domains offer social plugins and they are in a third-party context. So we see that Chrome appears to be the most robust of all. However, it's rather trivial for someone in a third-party context in Chrome to bring itself in a first-party context. It's as simple as opening a pop-up window. And we know that Safari blocks third-party cookies by default, but if the user interacts with the third-party element, third-party frame, or if an automated script fakes user interaction, then this restriction is lifted. And actually, this is something that Google did to enable the plus one button in certain situations. So another thing users can do, they can rely on the do not track HTTP header, which is basically a signal to the receiving site that the user wants to opt out from any forms of tracking. However, this is merely a policy technique, so you're still transmitting all the sensitive information plus this signal, and you're hoping that the other end will honor your request. One of the problems is that the definition of tracking is still under discussion, and that not many sites right now support this header. Finally, users can try removing third parties from web pages, and this is something that is commonly used to remove ads from pages. So if plugins are removed, they will never load, they will never issue any requests, so the user's privacy is protected. However, users lose the option of interacting with some of those plugins if they wish to. So it seems that users are upon a dilemma between privacy and functionality. If they wish to opt in for privacy, they might lose content personalization in social plugins, which basically takes half of the fun. And maybe they will lose social plugins altogether if they choose a more aggressive method. On the other hand, if they choose to keep the functionality they have right now, they will also be sharing their browsing activity with social networks. So the key motivation behind our work is that there should not be such a dilemma. So we're proposing a new design for building social plugins, which makes them privacy preserving, but at the same time allows for content personalization and maintains the original functionality. The key element in our approach is that for personalized social plugins, we are decoupling the retrieval of user-specific content from the loading of the social plugin. So in other words, we are preventing the browser from reaching the social network to retrieve this user-specific content as a result of the presence of a social plugin in a page, and we use a local data store, which has the user's social data, to offer the same form of content personalization that the user would get if he used the original social plugin. Now, we populate this local data store using all information accessible to the user already through his online social profile. And we do so in a privacy-preserving manner. So just to give you an example, let's consider the like button. The original like button would ask Facebook something like, please tell me whether any of my friends have liked page A, in which case this will reveal to Facebook who the user is and that he's interested in page A. In our case, we're asking something more like, please return all the like activity my friends have ever made in general. I mentioned that besides personalized social plugins, there is some non-personalized but page-specific content. So for instance, the number of people who have liked a particular page. And for those requests, we need to still ask more specific questions, like please return all non-personalized content for page A. But since the answer does not depend upon who the user is, we issue those requests anonymously at the application level. So in other words, we do not include any cookies or other information which could uniquely identify the user. We issue those requests to the social network in an asynchronous manner so that they are not concurrent with the loading of a social plugin. And we are caching those requests for frequently used social plugins so that we obscure the access patterns of the user. Of course, when we do issue those requests, we're revealing the IP address of the user to the social network. However, we argue that the IP address is not enough in most cases to uniquely identify a person. And if the user wishes to have more privacy, he can opt in for IP address anonymization solutions such as Tor. So we built a proposed design in an extension for Firefox and Chrome, and it's called the Safe Button. But what it does, it inspects outgoing HTTP requests and blocks those matching the ones for social plugins. And it places Safe Button replacements in the page where the original plugins were supposed to be. So these replacements utilize the local data store to offer the same content that the original plugin would do. So to support that, you can take a look at the slide. At the top, there's a screenshot of a safe button replacement rendering a like button from Facebook. And at the bottom, you can see the original like button. As you can see, they're pretty similar. So if the user wants to actually interact with the original plugin and click on it and communicate this information to Facebook so it can be added in his social profile, he can do so just by clicking on our safe button replacement. We reload the original button and the information is transmitted to Facebook. So in terms of support, we're able to fully support most of the plugins offered by Facebook right now, and we are able to partially support the rest. And this is due to some API shortcomings. So we use the developer's API to retrieve information from Facebook, and we found some limitations in the amount of information we can get for certain plugins. We're also able to support fully the plugins offered by Twitter and Google Plus and LinkedIn. Now, in terms of bootstrapping SafeButton, well, users are protected from the moment they install it. We begin downloading their social data as soon as they log in to one of those social networking services that we support. And just to give you an idea of how long the bootstrapping phase takes, a Facebook user with about 5,000 friends takes close to 10 hours to complete. However, we did use a very lazy scheduler, so we feel there's a lot of room for optimization there without raising any red flags on the server side. And of course, we issue periodic incremental updates on the local store so that we sync it with the information that is online on the user's social profile. In terms of resources, how much space we need to store all this information locally, we see a plot of the amount of space necessary as a function of the number of the friends of a user. So this is the case of Facebook, and we see that for a Facebook user which has about 190 friends, we require 5.5 megabytes of storage. And in the extreme case of a user with about 5,000 friends, we need to store about 146 megabytes to be able to offer the full personalization for the content of social plugins. We feel that even the case of 146 megabytes is reasonable, even for a mobile device. So in terms of performance, as a SafeButton retrieves all the user-specific content from the local data store and caches a lot of the non-user-specific content, we are avoiding a lot of network requests, so we're able to render our plugins faster than the original plugins. Now, while we were building our extension, we thought that, well, if users are not aware of the problem, if users are not aware of this threat, they may be unwilling or they may not try to find our extension and install it. Even if they find it, they may be unwilling to do so or may be unable. And we looked at some statistics for the AdBlock and NoScript extensions, which are two very popular security extensions for Firefox, and we saw that they had a very low adoption rate. So we thought that we should come up with a design which could be offered by the social networking services themselves as a service to their users without the need to install any software on the client side. So how exactly would that work? Well, web developers would still have to install to include social plugins as usual, usually in the form of iframes, but nothing would change there. The difference would be that the social network, instead of returning a social plugin, it would return a SafeButton agent, which would be more or less a JavaScript implementation of the SafeButton logic. Now, the key challenge here is how to do that without leaking any information in the process. So, for instance, we don't want to leak the URL of the page, including the social plugin or the user's cookies, while we're downloading the SafeButton agent. So for that reason, we propose to isolate social plugins in a different domain and also the SafeButton agent, and to do secure message passing between the domain of the social network and the isolated domain to communicate authentication cookies when necessary. So for instance, SafeButton agent needs some sort of authentication token, some sort of authentication key to be able to retrieve the user's data from the network. from the social network. We're also proposing the use of fragment identifiers, because right now the URL social plugins contain parameters identifying the page as GET parameters, and these are communicated to the server, and we don't want to do that, so we propose to switch to fragment identifiers, which are never communicated to the server, but the Safe Button agent is able to inspect them when it downloads and begins running in the browser. We're also proposing to make the agent cacheable so that the browser does very rarely requests the agent from the social networking service, thereby obscuring the user's access patterns. And finally, in order to accommodate the bad habit that users have to share the same browser, so we have one user logging out from Facebook and the other one logging in, we would propose to maintain many different data stores in parallel and encrypt each one of them using a user-specific server-supplied key, which remains in the memory of the Safe Button agent and is directly associated with the user's login status. So as soon as the user logs out from Facebook, the key gets invalid, the key gets erased, and the data store remains locked. Now, as a final discussion point, I know some people might feel uncomfortable storing all this information locally. There's a risk of having malware, friends snooping around the disk or the computer getting stolen. Well, first of all, we feel that it's not really that different from having all your data on the cloud, for instance, on Facebook or on Twitter, and then not being able to trust the software that you run on your computer. If you're running an untrusted software, if you're infected with malware, it might as well steal your password and download the data directly from the social network. At the same time, if a friend is tech-savvy enough to snoop around and open the data store of Safe Button, he's tech-savvy enough to install a keylogger and steal your password. And finally, since we are tying the fate of the data store to the fate of the login status of the user, as long as he has logged out from Facebook when the laptop gets stolen, the data store will remain locked and the attacker would have a hard time decrypting the data. So, in summary, in this talk, I have identified the privacy risks stemming from the current way social plugins are built. This is a risk serious. Most users are not aware of it. And when they try to do something about it using the current countermeasures, they are faced with a dilemma between choosing privacy or functionality. Then I presented our approach for a new design for building social plugins, which enables them to be privacy preserving, but at the same time, without sacrificing any functionality or content personalization. Our design ideally could be adopted by social networking services and offered as a service to their users without the need to install any additional software. This is a URL pointing to the project website of Safe Button. Don't worry, there are no social plugins there to track you. And that's it. Thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Please state your name and affiliation.
Serge Eigelman, UC Berkeley. So what you identify as privacy issues are basically considered features by the sites that are, you know, deploying these, as well as, you know, say Facebook, being able to track users across every site that they go to. So how can you say that this doesn't take away any functionality?
Well, what do you mean features?
So, I mean, Facebook wants lots of sites to deploy these things so they can see where their users are going and where any user is going.
Sure. So, okay. Well, if the user wants to explicitly interact with the button, so if I want to click on the like button and let my friends know, that's fine. But if I visit a random page and the like button leaks that information to Facebook that I'm visiting the page, well, that's not fine. I want to be able to make a decision that this is about to happen.
Right, but that's part of the purpose of these things, right? So you're taking away part of, you know, Facebook's value in these. So to say that it doesn't take away any functionality isn't correct.
Well, I think I'll disagree on that. So the value of a like button is that when I go to a page and I see that my friends have already clicked on the button, I might stick around a little bit longer. I might click on it I might browse around, so this is the value of a like button, and we're not taking away that. If I visit a random page which has which my friends have never visited, and I have no intention of clicking the button, I'm still leaking my information to Facebook, and I'm not getting anything back. So that's my opinion.
Okay, thanks.
Questions? Okay, let me ask you one clarifying question. Okay. So in your safe button system, so I assume that you store some kind of friends information about the person. So what happens, let's say you have the safe button, and then if I defriend you,
okay,
then would that propagate quickly to your thing so that, you know, since that point, you know, what I'm visiting is not going to be revealed to you. I guess I'm basically concerned about maybe some side effect of mm-hmm. having sort of separate, I guess, replication of this friend's database.
Right.
So not maintained by the social networking site.
Right. So we are periodically updating the local data store. So if a user defriends us, then we remove him from or her from the data store. And this means that when we're accessing information using the developer's API on Facebook, we no longer have access to that user's data. Of course, we have access to the user's old data, but this is a different case. We have access to that data even without the safe button. The browser will cache them, or someone could, you know, replicate the data. So, you know, we just don't have access to future information about that user.